AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
The dust is settling after yesterday's sell-off in the grain markets, and buyers are just kind of strolling back into the markets. Grains have recovered about half of what they lost yesterday. And speaking of markets, let's get back to the development of the carbon market. Some new players have come to the table.
Live from a monochromatic wonderland via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with Kurt Blades, Senior VP at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Then we'll talk with Chris Harbert, Global Head of Carbon at Indigo Ag. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much.
Morning.
Are things a little white out there? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. If I was going to paint a landscape portrait of my neighborhood, I would just need one color. That's it. Just the one color.
And you could probably go real abstract, you know, and just toss.
Oh, very abstract. Yeah.
Right.
Just here's the canvas. Just hang that on the wall. That's what it looks like today.
Wow. Crazy.
Got some furries going too, just a little bit.
All right.
More's coming.
All right. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're going to get back into the carbon conversation today. Okay. Proving that we can and that carbon emissions are reduced by changing up practices and production practices, that we can actually capture carbon. That's going to be the first conversation that we're going to have with Kurt Blades from AEM. And then we've got some new players that have come to the table that are looking to buy carbon credits. And Chris from Indigo Ag is going to be with us to discuss that. It's going to be an interesting conversation. I'm really looking forward to it because it's kind of an innovative approach that one of these new players is taking in the carbon market. It's going to be interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So,
all right, man.
So we talk about it, and then we talk about how to get paid for it. Is that
there
the idea?
There you go.
That's what we got going?
That's exactly what we are doing. All right, man. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said the central bank will continue to bolster the economy with low interest rates and hefty asset purchases as it focuses on the strength of the labor market. The Fed is unlikely to, quote, even think about withdrawing policy support by raising rates or reducing its bond purchases for the foreseeable future, Powell said at a virtual appearance Wednesday before the Economic Club of New York. The Fed chief also repeated his call for more fiscal assistance for the economy, saying that monetary policy alone will not be enough to restore the labor market to full strength. Chip.
Wow. Well, restoring the labor market to full strength, that is what it was before the disruption caused by the COVID shutdowns. It's not just lower interest rates to get us there. It's going to take a lot of time to get us back to where we were.
Well, and don't you need to restore the consumer market
to
some degree as well? I mean, isn't that trick to drive
and bring 100,000 restaurants back?
Yes, exactly.
This is an unbelievable effort that's going to be taking place.
Yes. Well, U.S. oil demand recovered last week to 20.18 million barrels per day from 18.53 million barrels per day the previous week. That's according to the Energy Information Administration. Jet fuel consumption rose the most. That's key, Trip. While motor gasoline and diesel saw slight upticks, EIA also reported a major draw of 6.6 million barrels of crude from storage, reducing the glut in the market, leading to oil prices rising this morning. Brent crude, the international benchmark, now over $60 a barrel, Chip.
Wow. Yeah. Brent's over
60
bucks a barrel.
We've been watching for that jet fuel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you've got WTI at about $58.50 in the March contract. You look at that move that we've seen since early November in the energy markets. Yeah. I'm not trying to place any blame for the higher energy costs, but they've been going straight up since Very early November for some reason.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, President Joe Biden expressed concerns to Chinese leader Xi Jinping about human rights in Hong Kong and Xinjiang in their first call since Biden took office. Their talk included discussions on human rights, trade, climate change, and nuclear proliferation. A White House statement said Biden raised his fundamental concerns about Beijing's coercive and unfair economic practices as well as human rights issues and preserving a free and open Indo-Pacific region, but it said the leaders discussed cooperation on fighting COVID-19, climate change, and other issues.
Hmm.
We heard earlier this week, I just haven't had a chance to talk to him. Huh?
Right.
Looks like his schedule opened up.
Well, there's that. There's that. And it also seems like many of the most important, at least what is most important on the list for many consumers out there, it didn't get much attention in the conversation. And instead, back to talking about some of the same old things that we've been talking about.
Right. Well, as the House Ag Committee works to mark up the ag portion of the latest COVID relief bill, Representative G.T. Thompson is expressing alarm at the lack of bipartisanship. Alarm is a nice word for it, saying
right.
GOP members were left out of the drafting process, saying, quote, rather than spending time to work with Republicans, the Democratic leadership in the House and Senate are abusing the reconciliation progress to jam through a very narrow partisan agenda with the barest of majorities. Thompson continued, quote, what we are marking up today was written behind closed doors. Yeah. Republicans were cut out of the process, yeah. Chip.
Yeah, there's they've gone public with the disputes. It's like we talked about yesterday. The dirty laundry is being hung out on the line for everybody to see in the Ag Committee right now, the House Ag Committee, at least.
Yep.
And it'll be a topic of discussion that we will have tomorrow for sure on the free-for-all. All right, Davis, thank you, buddy.
You bet.
Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Well, Greg, they did it. Head on over to the printer and grab me a steak.
Absolutely, Chip. You know, the world's first slaughter-free ribeye steak has been printed on what's called a bioprinting by an Israeli company. Now, Chip, I've seen a photo of this steak and this ribeye, and you can make out a resemblance there to a ribeye, but appealing, you know, that's, I guess, in the eye of the beholder.
Right.
So they're claiming it incorporates muscle and fat similar to real cows, and the product boasts the same attributes of, this is their words, Chip, a tender, delicious, juicy ribeye steak.
Okay. Has anybody documented it by actually taking a big bite out of this thing?
So, you know, it's coming to market in probably late 2022. You know, what the price point is going to be, we don't know. We know it's going to be very expensive. I think the bigger issue here that we need to focus on is that they are selling this product and the plant-based products based on the fact they're questioning real beef's environmental footprint and animal welfare concerns.
Right.
So they obviously can't win if they say tastes like beef or even tastes like chicken. You know, they've got to find another hook to sell these products. And so that's it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what the level of acceptance of this type of a product will be going forward. Greg, thanks for the update, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Kurt Blades from AEM up next. Hey, everybody. Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online. And I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? Calf Perk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get Calf Perk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello. Yes.
Yeah. Davis, totally. Margie Echocamp, the editor at The Scoop, has been talking about a survey that the Association of Equipment Manufacturers has done to, and the survey, number one, there's some information in there on how much technology has been adopted, how it's being used, how some of the benefits of the technology that is out there. And they did a heck of a job with this survey, and it's interesting. I want to get some of the details right now from Kurt Blades. Kurt is the Senior VP of Agriculture Services at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, AEM. He joins us right now. Kurt, welcome to AgriTalk.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Chip.
You bet. Glad that you're here. Glad you're here. Let's put some groundwork down on this survey before we get to some of the findings. When was it done?
Well, the study is called The Environmental Benefits of Precision Agriculture, and it's actually been in the works for about 2 years. And it came about with when we were just posed with the question from some of our members saying, "Hey, has anybody ever benchmarked what is the environmental benefit of all of this precision agriculture is out in the field, tractors driving themselves and section control and variable rate technology?" And we did a little bit of digging and realized that there's nothing out there that's quantified it. But as you also know, it's logical that if a tractor's driving itself, it's going to be more efficient. It's going to use a little bit less fuel. It's going to use a little bit less active ingredient. So we attempted to try to put this together in the study that Margie mentions in the scoop, as well as things that we've been pushing out there right now.
Right, right. Okay. Who was included in the survey? Who provided the answers?
Well, this actually was a kind of a study of studies, for lack of a better term. In fact, we used, first of all, let me back up just a little bit. As you know, there's a lot of good research out there about the economic benefits of precision agriculture on an individual farming operation. But what was kind of missing was that societal benefit. So what we did is that we first worked with, kind of a literature review of all of the data that's out there with universities and some private groups that have done some work on the environmental benefit. And then we added to that a collection of experts from around the industry and around the world that have be able to put some quantifiable numbers on things like carbon reduction or fuel reduction or increased productivity. And then we finally rounded that out with a series of consultants that really filled in the gaps and connected all the dots together, partnering with a group called the Context Network to do most of the heavy lifting on this.
Okay. Interesting. Now, when I think of technology and AEM, I think tractors, I think combines, I think tillage equipment. But that's maybe too narrow of a view, because we're also looking at technology and the benefits of technology on equipment like milkers, stuff like that, right?
Well, this particular study doesn't dive into milkers, but absolutely a next generation of this will be taking a look at that. But you're right, Chip. When we talk about equipment, we're talking about all sorts of mechanization. And it's not just, tractors and bent iron. It's ones and zeros and technologies and software all fall into the same category of equipment that AEM represents. And then this study specifically is diving into that precision ag technology that's really used for growing crops for the most part.
Okay. So let's get into some of the findings, the discoveries here. The adoption of precision ag, what has it done? Where have we gained efficiencies?
Well, the best place to look at for the adoption of precision ag, or actually for the benefit of precision ag, has simply to do with increased production. And so if you look at just, increased production alone, we've seen, some major efficiency gains. Now, obviously, over the last 20 years, we've seen efficiency gains and production gains in production agriculture that are due to a lot of things, including, new genetics and different tillage practices and other things. But we've been able to isolate specifically that we're ranking about 4% of the total increase in production is directly tied to that adoption of precision agriculture. And that's using the technologies of auto guidance, variable rate technology, and section control. And, you know, just to put that in perspective, 4% increase in yield due to precision agriculture is the amount of about 4.5 Yellowstone National Parks. So that's a lot of acreage that is, frankly, hasn't been necessary to bring into production around the world to feed this growing society simply by adopting great technology. And that's at existing adoption rates. Take that one step further, we find we kind of anticipate another 6% gain can be achieved simply by more adoption of precision agriculture in North America alone.
Okay. What is the adoption rate? I mean, it seems to me like when we're talking about the auto guidance or auto steer, whatever you want to call it, it seems like every farmer I talk to is using it. But what is the real adoption rate out there, Kurt?
Well, it absolutely varies by crop. It varies by region.
Okay.
It varies by a lot of different things. But, you know, I think, you know, most of the farmers that you're going to be talking to and knowing your old footprint with AgriTalk is largely Midwest and largely row crop. Corn and soybean adoption for auto guidance is around 60%. Cotton is a little bit higher at about 80%. Sugar beets, things, you know, tubers, things that are under the ground, it's about 80% as well. So we're seeing pretty sizable adoption of row crops. When you get into other areas like, you know, some of the specialty crops, hay and forage, you know, the adoption rates begin to go down just a little bit. It's also, you know, worthy of noting that, you know, in some areas of the world where you've got big farms, like where I'm sitting here in Iowa, you got big farms, or in Illinois or Ohio, we got big farms. It makes a whole lot of sense for auto guidance because you got those really big rows. But, you know, where my family farms in Missouri, some of those smaller plots are a little bit more hill. The auto guidance, you know, it has absolute value, but the adoption rates are a little bit lower.
Okay. All right. Cotton, leading the way there. Is cotton leading the way in other precision ag adoption?
Well, cotton's an interesting one to take a look at. And, you know, as you know, it's not a huge number of acres in North America, but it's a sizable amount. But why we specifically wanted to include cotton in this study is because we know that cotton is a crop protection intensive crop. And so we know that there's a lot of gains, a lot of environmental gains that can be derived through that adoption of technology. And a lot of that technology is driven by, you know, that efficiency that comes from, you know, being able to use things variable rate or section control.
Right. Right. Okay. So what's next for this information that you've gathered, accumulated?
Well, this study was designed, you know, farmers, we're loving to talk to farmers about it because I want farmers to know that it's available out there to share. But this was not designed for farmers. This was designed for regulators. This was designed for those that are not familiar with farming to really put some quantifiable numbers to dispel some of the myths that technology is a really good thing for farmers and a really good thing for the environment. And really want to tell that story that, hey, farmers got this. In fact, these adoption rates that you talk about, these were adopted because it makes sense for the farmer. The environmental benefits are just kind of a ride-along. And what's great is that, you know, aggregated together, it makes a really big difference. But a farmer's still making those decisions to adopt that technology on their own. And so that's the message that we've been bringing to anyone that would listen, whether it's a regulator in D.C. or whether it's elected officials, you know, around the nation, even around the world, or whether it's food companies and folks that are looking to make some decisions on the ingredients that they put into their consumer packaged goods to tell this positive story in a good way.
Okay. Can we use some of the findings to quantify just how much benefit we're seeing from precision ag?
Absolutely. Okay. In fact, you know, we again designed the study to be, and you know, we're partnering with some of the commodity organizations, Corn Growers, American Soybean Association, CropLife America have been primary sponsors, as well as most of the other commodity organizations have been involved with this as well. But they are using the same data to share with, their membership and make it available to their farmers that get involved in policy conversations as well as advocating on behalf of agriculture. And we designed this with, easy sound bites that can be talked about, such as, the amount of acreage that can be avoided by use of precision agriculture, or the amount of fuel savings that, put it in reference to the amount of cars taken off the road. These are sound bites that make a big difference to those non-farm audiences.
Excellent. Kurt, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. We all do.
You bet. Thanks so much.
You bet. That's Kurt Blade, Senior Vice President for Agriculture Services at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Hey, everybody. Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beads, we backed off from the highs a bit, but still some solid gains, corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Yeah, pretty good price recovery here, Chip. We kind of shook the tree the last couple days, but we've seen the buyers return, and especially in the soybean market. It's had gains in excess of 20 cents. Like you said, we backed off those a little bit. The meal market is strongly higher as well. And then corn is along for the ride today. I think that's important from a bullish standpoint, that we do see the buyers come in after a couple of days of pretty hefty losses when it looked like maybe the tides were turning, the buyers return.
Okay. What, anything in particular driving this? Or is this just more money flow and activity?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's mostly just the funds. They liquidated longs the past 2 days, and now they're back on the buy side of the market this morning. No real fundamental news. I mean, we had weekly export sales, and they were okay. Pretty solid numbers for both corn and soybeans, but nothing that wasn't expected. So, just money flow, like you said.
Okay, very good. Take us over to livestock. Got some price pressure there.
Yeah, cattle market, we're seeing cash trade around 114, so we backed off on the futures just a little bit, probably because we're out in front of the cash a little bit more than needed to be. On the hog side of things, pretty solid weekly export sales, with China being the lead buyer there. That's kind of counteracted a little bit by the reports out of China that they found COVID on a shipment of U.S. pork. The good news is there that it isn't causing heavy pressure on futures by any means.
Right. Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This year, you can attend Commodity Classic without leaving your farm. The 2021 special edition of Commodity Classic delivered digitally March 2nd through 5th. Register at CommodityClassic.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis, it was interesting, the conversation with Kurt there about how he stressed, listen, the reason that we've got the adoption rate that we've got on precision agriculture to this point is because it benefits the producer.
That's right.
Now, when you do that, then you have to back up, go look at, okay, now that we've got this level of adoption, what does it mean for, what does variable rate mean for reducing nitrate runoff? What does it mean for reducing fuel use, therefore cutting our carbon emissions? It's work that needs to be done to quantify exactly how much benefits are out there based on those different practices, so that if we are going to develop this market, this carbon market, or as the carbon market develops,
there you go,
we'll be able to assign some value to those practices. All right. Chris Harbert is the global head of carbon for Indigo Ag, and he joins us right now. Chris, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chip. Living the pandemic lifestyle here in Illinois.
Gotcha. This is, it's a fascinating development, and more manufacturers, processors are interested in finding ways that they can support the effort to reduce carbon output. And Chris, there's some new players that have come to the table by way of Indigo Ag. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there's been just a great kind of support. And for me, you know, it's always any new market's all about the customers wherever they are, and trying to find and make sure we've got the right product in a program like Indigo's Carbon to be able to connect the buyers of these credits to the producers who are able to actually supply that demand. And we had a great announcement here this week from Maple Leaf Foods, North Face, Epiphany Craft Malt, to add to a whole bunch of others that have joined us already: JP Morgan Chase, IBM, Barclays, Dogfish Head, New Belgium Beers. We got a lot of brewers, well, and it makes sense, you know. It's a drink, you know. It's a way to be social, so and talk about this and get it out there. Yeah,
exactly, and the brewers can do incentives back to the producer level to adopt more environmentally friendly stewardship, whatever you want to call it, farming practices, and bring those grains into their brewing. So that makes sense to me big time. And North Face is taking a similar approach in cotton, right?
Correct. Yeah. So they're launching a new line of garments that are made with a low carbon cotton. And we're able to connect both the producer to a higher premium on that pound of cotton, along with the carbon credit that comes in conjunction with being able to create that. So
yeah,
double win.
All right. Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Is this for, can farmers expect to get value from an existing practice, or is this for new practices only?
Yeah, with the carbon program for Indigo, it's for new practices, and that's okay. Part of it. It's not an Indigo thing. It's what the buyers are requiring. They're saying, look, we want to make an impact on the atmosphere, change the condition of today to something different in the future. We're asking growers to come in and do something additional, something new. So for us, it's new practices going forward, but practices that take a farmer in the right direction in terms of overall profitability, not just of carbon, but improving the opportunity, resiliency, other things on their farm that can ultimately help in tough years.
Right. Chris, do you see an opportunity out there for growers that were early adopters in some of the precision ag technology that is reducing our farming's carbon footprint? Is there an opportunity out there for those early adopters to get to participate in the market for practices that they've had in place for a long time?
Yeah, and I think the right way to think of it is there's always something that everyone can do a little bit differently, but it's not going to give you a large carbon benefit from doing something small. If you're already an adopter of no tillage, of cover crops, you're effectively really optimizing your nutrient. There's not going to be a lot in a carbon program of today for that producer's deep in that route already. It's going to be really good for the guys that are not. For those, but to your point of those that are already deep in those practices, a program like what North Face is putting together is a real option for them, because that relies on a history of these practices being there to create that cotton. You know, so that is a great example of things that Indigo is trying to bring to the market to help address those growers who've been doing the right thing for a long time, make sure they can participate in some kind of program. But the major part of the new carbon programs that we're putting out there are for the vast majority of agriculture, vast majority of row crop acres that really haven't adopted these practices yet. So there's a great opportunity for that middle part of this group to make a big move here.
Okay. As we've been trying to understand the development of this carbon market and everything, I think an important thing that producers need to think about is that the buyers of these credits want those purchases and how they how those that that the carbon was captured, they want it to fit with the story that they're telling, and therefore they want it customizable to the story that they want to tell, right?
Right. It's a customizable story in some cases. In others, when we're talking about businesses, and this is the great opportunity, I think, in carbon, these are businesses that aren't buying the agricultural product that's being produced on the acre, but they're still interested in trying to figure out ways they can work with agricultural carbon credits and buy those credits. And they're looking for, in that case, remember, this is the product that you don't deliver. You leave it in the ground, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, making sure that it's of a high quality and to a high standard is really paramount to those credit buyers. They're looking for something that can be assured at the highest level. We use an external registry to do that, and we really require a lot of rigor in what we're doing. Both we hold ourselves to a high standard, and we hold the producers that we're working with to a high standard, too, to make sure that we keep that market price high and ultimately the best return on a carbon credit to a farmer.
Right, right. Are we still talking about, you know, roughly $20 a ton from most of these programs?
Yeah, right now, or that seems to be a price we're settling in on around 20. I see it moving higher. Like when we look at the different programs that are being announced and the quality of those credits, I think we'll see a move in that market as certainly as demand increases. We're just seeing such demand from the world of carbon credits. And then as grower supply ramps up to meet that, I think we'll see the price go up in the short term and settle. Okay. Ultimately, I think it'll become a tradable, you know, but it's not there yet. It's one-off builds right now.
Tradable suggests to me that there will be kind of a standardized platform to put carbon sellers and carbon buyers together. Is that the right kind of thinking?
Yeah, I think ultimately we'll settle on a standard. I mean, my personal priority in my everyday job is to make sure Indigo is that standard. But I think definitely there's an opportunity for both a high standard to come out of the registry approvals that we have. Those third party registries, Vera and Climate Action Reserve, are two of the industry standards, and we're working with those organizations to make sure that all the standards are being met, and we're creating that highest quality credit.
Right, right, okay. There's one other name in the conversation here recently, and that's Cool Effect. What is Cool Effect?
Yeah, Cool Effect's it's a marketplace of carbon where a person can go out. You know, we've talked a lot about businesses going out and getting these carbon credits. But we're able to package up a group and make it available on Cool Effect for individuals to go out and say, you know, I drive a lot going to the office, or I'm doing this or that or the other thing. I'd like to offset my own personal carbon footprint, or I'd like to participate. That's an opportunity for the individual to go out and participate in this as well, not just corporations. So we're really, really happy to see them part of the program.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I really understand the brewers. I really get North Face. Help me explain Maple Leaf Foods and what they're trying to achieve.
Their overall goal with Maple Leaf is to just be a carbon neutral to carbon negative company. They made that corporate thing saying that we're going to produce this and we're going to be the first carbon negative producer in meat packing and in meat production, right? So they're trying to figure out how to achieve that. And there are things that they can't undo, and buying carbon credits from agriculture help them achieve that. And that ultimately, as they beat the carbon out of their supply chain every which direction they can, the carbon credits from agriculture, from row crop agriculture in the U.S., help them meet that need.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, we're almost out of time, but 2021 feels like there's not just momentum behind the development of the carbon markets, feels like there's a rocket booster on it, doesn't it?
Oh, it really is. And, you know, we've seen the political tailwinds here really kind of come in and fit. And I'm really excited to see where all of it goes. And it's a wide open opportunity for growers, for sure.
Well, strap in. Indigo Ag is going to be a big player, and it's Indigo Ag is where I first learned about carbon markets and the potential for it and the development of it. So I appreciate that, Chris. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Chris Harbert from Indigo Ag.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
I'm sure that millions of people think that this is an appropriate bump following the conversation that we just had, because it does feel a little mashed up. Mm-hmm. Out there in the carbon markets.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
Trying to figure it all out. You know, the whole conversation, I found myself listening so intently to what both Kurt and Chris were talking about. And the reason I think is because, man, we got to get we've got to have a really solid understanding of what these companies want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the carbon credits for new practices only. Okay. There's that I know some of the leaders in this whole effort are a little put out by that.
Sure.
Because they, you know, you can't find a way to participate in it. Or, I shouldn't say that. We are still looking for a way for those people to participate in this. But otherwise, if you're not paying for new practice, Davis, isn't it just a shell game then?
I think so. And
yeah. And I think that's what people are having a hard time. For me, it's one of the things that I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around.
Well, and here's the thing. For those people who say, well, we've been doing this all along, and, you know, okay, maybe there should be some sort of retroactive compensation. I don't know. You know, at the very least, just mark on there that you're an early adopter. They don't need to know you've been doing this for 15 years. Just pretend.
Maybe.
Hey, you know what? I think I'm going to switch to no-till. I don't know. Well, I might do that. I might use carbon capture practices from here on out. I don't know. Maybe. I guess. Just check the box. Just check the box.
That's being held to. That's what Chris was talking about in verification, holding the process to a very high standard. I don't think there's going to be much room for, this is the first time I've no-tilled. I don't think there's going to be much room for that.
Yeah,
really don't.
Okay.
I really don't. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, I got something. We didn't quite get to, there were a couple items in the news. If I can just circle back. Can I do that?
Sure.
obviously it's absolutely chilly outside. Brisk. Brutal in some areas. I got to bring this to your attention, America. Propane prices have climbed more than 70% since late November. That's thanks to an explosion in patio heating and an uptick in exports to Asia. And, of course, the Arctic gust now delivering some of the coldest temperatures in decades to the Great Plains and upper Midwest could push prices for the fuel even higher. Up 70% since late November. Now, you've probably got your propane already contracted. I'm sure you'll be fine. But something definitely to be aware of. Chip?
Yeah. I'm sure that the increase in demand is one of the driving forces. But look at the timetable on this thing. You go back to the first week of November, and that is when crude oil prices started to go to the upside.
I know.
You can take it back to that and the policies that are coming out of the Biden administration. I think the market has decided to get out in front of and factor in some some longer term changes that are still to come.
Mm-hmm. And I heard cotton pop up in the conversation earlier today.
Yeah.
This from the National Cotton Council. They've just completed their 40th annual planting survey. Yeah. Showed U.S. producers intend to sow 11.5 million acres of cotton in 2021. Yep. That's down 5.2% from 2020. That was as of the start of January. Since then, of course, prices have climbed. The NCC estimate compares to the 2021 cotton grower acreage survey projection, which is a different survey, of 11.61 million total cotton acres. Not a whole lot of difference there. Looks like about 11.5 million acres probably going to be planted to cotton this year, Chip.
You know, and that survey is usually pretty doggone good.
Yes.
And it's going in the wrong direction. I think that many in the market think it is going to go. I'm going to make the first mention of it. We're about a month and a half away from the prospective plantings report.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
And there's going to be a lot
gonna
of
be
attention.
Surprised.
Somebody's going to be surprised. There's going to be a lot of attention paid to it just simply because I would say that in a big way, that's going to be the start of, if there is going to be a late round in the acreage battle, mm-hmm. that's what could start it. Is the prospective plantings report, because the expectations, I think, in the cotton market are that the market has already bought some acres, and mm-hmm. that we will see an increase from year ago. But the NCC, National Cotton Council, has got it down about 600,000 acres from what we planted in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
So
well, remember the big trend was at 2012, 13-ish. When we were down south doing seminars, and people were talking about, you know what, I'm getting rid of this cotton planter, this cotton picker. I'm going all to corn. That's all there is to it.
And the thing is, when you're talking about $1 million machine,
mm-hmm.
you don't just get
no
rid of it
back.
1 year and come back and
right.
get a new one the next year.
Right.
So that has. Yeah, it's been an interesting process, and cotton
Red
acres
lightly.
have been pushing lower. So, down another 600,000 acres from 2020 is what that survey indicates. Got to get engaged, cotton. Cotton's got to get engaged in this thing, and it is trying a little bit today. Thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. We're going to be talking with the guys from Tucrium ETF. Sal Gilberte is going to be our guest tomorrow morning, free for all, Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Recker, right here on AgriTalk.